Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Mully and Hall. Mornings live at 5 on Sports Radio 670 The Score. 670thescore.com. Chicago's sports station.
The winter meetings are actually even later than usual, so we kind of have 1 week before Christmas, and we know things usually slow up over that break. So, if things don't happen last week, next week we kind of know things are going to drag probably into January. So, like I said, every market's different, but certainly this has been a slower one.
His competitiveness has been a part of this from the start. He was, again, very much on board when he, Kenny, and I talked about this from the start, about how things were going to unfold and some of the hardship that were going to be at the front end and some of the moves that we wanted to be a part of potentially on the back end to move this thing along.
Mully and Hall, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Gordon Whitmire of the Chicago Sun-Times covering the Cubs, kind enough to sit in. And you're not just covering the Cubs, you're covering baseball. You cover both teams at the winter meetings. And you heard the voices there, Jed Hoyer and Rick Hahn. And
much different tones.
Totally different tones. Listen, you would rather be in the Cubs position 1,000 times over than in the White Sox position. But
no, not at this moment in time.
That's what's interesting about it, is that the White Sox are trying to make a step up while the Cubs are trying to preserve what they believe is a championship window. And all of what's happened since the season ended, we talk about the Bears and we say, wow, if they didn't lose that Giants game, if they didn't lose that Miami game, think about how good this could be. And it still might be fine. They still might get the number two seed. It's something to play for. The Cubs, if they had won one more game, they ended up at the end of the season tied with Milwaukee after the – and you were on those trips after that terrible slog to end the year, all the makeup games, and then they have to play the extra game, and then they have to – they lose it, and they have to play the play-in game.
Those 95 wins tied for the best record in the National League.
And instead, it's looked at as we came up short. There needs to be more urgency. That was like the key term, right? A sense of urgency. If it wasn't for the petting zoo, the one day maybe they'd have won. I don't know what to make of where they are right now, because Joe's situation is so fascinating to me. His son going on Instagram, I almost said Twitter, it was Instagram, whatever social media site he used to kind of criticize management. We've heard his agent trying to drum up some business, everyone's saying that's okay. Even Joe, as cool as a cucumber as he is about everything, there was an element of trolling to that, wasn't there?
I don't feel badly about it.
He just kind of like, it just, he was put on the Joe show in Vegas, and
right.
and it made you wonder, wow, Joe's taking the higher ground. And then you made you wonder, like, yeah, is he really? Or is he kind of out there letting everybody know that he's going to be a free agent?
Well, this has been a long time coming, too. And I think by the time he got there to the winter meetings last week, it had long been something that had sunk into him and this reality that he was not going to get renewed. A lot goes into it that doesn't often get talked about. We were talking earlier about, what the Manager of the Year Award and some of the changes in that role in baseball these days. And one of them is somebody brought up the money, and that's a big part of this too. He came in with a 5-year, $25 million deal that escalated by $1 million a year when they won the World Series. So he's a $6 million a year manager right now. Those don't exist anymore. And if you don't know where you're going after this season or next season in terms of your competitive window, or whether you're going to have to scale back a little bit to kind of regroup before you build back up again or reevaluate some of your core, then it's awfully difficult to commit to an extension that has to start at $6 million a year. Because if you decide to change a year into that, that's a big expense for anybody, and you kind of look foolish for giving a guy an extension of that magnitude and then cutting him loose. So if he was making a million or two a year, I think he'd have that extension right now. I think that would
– Right.
He's
a victim of his own success in a way.
In a way, yeah. And things change. A lot of this evolution sort of accelerated since he signed that contract. So that's definitely a big part of what's in play. But the reality is, as Theo called it, this is a year of reckoning for this team coming up. And, you know – they're still very high on a lot of these young core players and think they can take that collective step forward. They said the same thing going into last season. I'm not as high on some of these guys as they are. It remains to be seen. So we'll see if they're right. But they also acknowledge that they're going to have to evaluate that a little bit harder in 2019 than maybe they have the last couple of years. So that's all of that plays into this.
So, you know, there's a ton to get to on this, but I want to go back to what you were talking about with Chris Bryant. And I know that you've written this before and we've talked about this before, but, you know, the reality of his contract inching ever closer to an end, and the idea that Scott Boras wants his guys to play out their deals and get to free agency, the idea that somehow the Cubs – prevented him from starting that clock, and that is something that that won't be forgiven or forgotten, and it's another reason that you want to get to the end of it and give everybody a bite at the apple. Are we out of an age where there is a player that is a building block that comes and stays for? I mean, you look at the career trajectory of Chris Bryant, and I know he was injured last year and he struggled. But here's a guy that was like the minor league player of the year. Everybody was watching and waiting to come up. Then he comes up and he absolutely delivers. And you build your team around him. He's an MVP. He's just the kind of the perfect kind of building block for a team. He gets married. He's, you know, like, you want a guy like that in your system. He just seems to have nothing. He just seems to be all about baseball. And I don't know that we'll ever see that again. You know, the Ernie Banks and Billy Williams, et cetera. I don't think we're ever going to see guys that stay with one team and are there forever. Not so-called superstars, not guys with super agents.
Yeah, that's a great point, because as you were talking, I was thinking there are a couple of guys on this team that could be like that. And I think Anthony Rizzo's one of those guys.
And it is his third team.
Exactly. And Kyle Schwarber's one of those guys. If he becomes let's be honest, if he becomes an everyday player, if he becomes a fixture and then is able to sort of take over some clubhouse leadership that they've long projected, he could be one of those guys. But we already know that Chris Bryant has the makings of superstardom. We've seen it. He's the best hitter on this team. And yet there was kind of this acknowledgement, or at least a kind of evaluation from the beginning, even from drafting him, that if he became what they expected him to become, they could maybe game the system a little bit and have 7 years of control over him, during which they would build a competitive window, but that in all likelihood, given his agent and the expectations they had for his performance, that he would be gone at the end of that. And plus, keep in mind too, he's a college player, which means that he's older.
Yes.
Than, you know, Bryce Harper's got how many years in now? And he's a free agent, right? So he's
younger than Chris Bryant.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And Bryant's got three more years to free agency. And so what's his age going to be there? What's his market value going to be there? How many years can you project there? So if you're the Cubs and he's looking for top market value at the end of that, even in the very beginning, it's pretty easy to project with Scott Boras as his agent that you're going to be asked to pay for more than you're going to want of who he is at that point. So this is this idea that he would be gone as soon as he's eligible for free agency. It's nothing new. I've written about it. I think I've probably talked on your show about that. And now that they've already won, he's got that Holy Grail championship. He's got his MVP, his Rookie of the Year award. I think it's probably even more likely.
All right, Joe said something about the lineup that I think is really important and worth a discussion. We'll hear what Joe had to say in Vegas and on the MLB Network, and talk a little bit about the balancing of this lineup and how this works now moving forward with the renewed sense of urgency. He's Gordon Whitmire. It's Mully and Haw on The Score.
Did you read the Mona Lisa?
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 6-7 of The Score. Gordon Whitmire, kind enough to join us this morning. And we were talking, Gordon, about the Cubs and the lineup and all the rest of it. And I got to tell you, I thought it was fascinating to listen to what Joe had to say. Joe did the public news conference, and then he went to XM Radio, and he was talking to them. Let's just listen to a little bit of that. It was very interesting.
Is that still something that you look at into this year, regardless of where the position might be, finding a way to, in addition to accentuating what you have, Joe, maybe adding another bat somewhere that can give you a little bit of relief in terms of, hey, look, I know a guy who can get on base and put these other guys in position better than we currently have?
Yeah, I think we've already spoken about that, adding more of a professional bat to go with this particular group.
Right.
Listen, Zoe's not going to play every day. You know, Riz did another really good job as the season was in progress, and I consider them really professional at bats, KB when he's well. If we could get something like that to interject in the lineup at different moments, but Schwarber's got to play. Hap's got to play. Almora's got to play. Jason Hayward's going to play. When Addison, everything clears up, Addison's going to play. And then you got KB, you got David Bodie's going to play, you got your catches. We got the thing about our lineup on a daily basis is we get criticized for having multiple lineups, but it's you're developing a lot of young players, and they all got to play. So as you get somebody in there that may be more of a stabilizing influence within the lineup, you still have to understand these youthful guys, if you're going to continue to develop them, they have to have their time. They have to have their plate appearances. So that's the balancing act. And, like, honestly, last year, if I agonized over anything, I normally do just over bullpens, but the batting, the lineup daily to really ameliorate all these guys.
And
I think, like, Happer was, like, 462, the least number of plate appearances among the whole group, but they were all between, like, middle 450s and about 500. So it's a talented group. We got to extract the most out of them.
So you need another professional hitter, but you got too many guys to put in the lineup, and everybody needs 450 at-bats, and it's a real juggling act, and that's what he's telling you.
And by the way, that professional hitter's probably not going to be an everyday player, so you're right back where you started. I don't think that constantly switching the lineup around it necessarily hurts these guys. I think that's just a pretty common reality in today's game, and I think a lot of young players have to deal with that early on. And anybody that's played for Joe these last few years certainly has adjusted and made that adjustment, or they're not going to make any adjustments. So I don't think that's a big issue. I think the big issue when you look at this is how many of these guys deserve more at-bats than they're getting. I mean, Rizzo and Bryant went into last season as probably the only guys that could count on being in the lineup every day, and then Javi Baez quickly joined them. Beyond that, you have your catcher who's got to be given a day or two off a week. So I'm kind of taking him out of the equation. Beyond that, everybody else was essentially a platoon guy. I mean, Hayward in there for his defense, and you put him in center field once in a while, depending on what you're doing with the lineup. The guy to watch this year is probably Schwarber. He's the guy with on paper and what we've seen so far in some big moments and the progress he made last year has probably the highest upside, the highest ceiling yet to achieve with his bat. And if he can take another step forward, then maybe he's the other guy. But beyond that, I don't know who else you're talking about. I mean, Addison Russell was that guy for a while, but he's inside of his head. He's got so many issues right now, and some of them are baseball.
The power outage was alarming, right?
Absolutely. I mean, this is a guy who when he got a lot of attention for the RBIs, and Joe was big on that for a while. But when he was getting all those RBIs a couple of years ago, it was because he was hitting home runs. And when he hits for power, now he's a plus player all the way around for you, and you can live with him offensively. If he's not hitting for power, he's really not doing anything for you offensively because he's not an on-base guy by any means, and you know he's not going to hit for a high average.
312-644-6767. Jeff is in Warren. Jeff, you're on with Mully and Gordon.
Good morning, fellas. Enjoy your show. Gordon, thanks for being on the air. You need to be on more. I love to hear your voice.
Oh, thanks. I appreciate that.
You were talking earlier about whether we'll see the career-committed players staying in the one place for an extended time, and that I don't think we'll ever see it again. I mean, it's all about greed. These guys are making so much money. I mean, their grandkids will be set for life.
David Rivers
in San Diego could have got more money, but he decided to stay. Tom Brady, Chipper Jones stayed in Atlanta 17 years, but he could have got more money. But they're making so much more money. I know they'll say, well, somebody's going to pay me, I might as well play. But it's all about greed. I mean, they're making more money. It's so disgusting now. We'll never see it again.
What would you do? I mean, if you're an accountant and your firm, you feel you're not making enough money or you're not getting raises enough or promotions, what would you do? Would you just stay there because of some kind of loyalty because they gave you your first job, or would you go?
They're getting $1 million extensions and contracts. How much money do they need?
Well, is it about what the sheer dollar value is, or is it about what the market is? I mean, everything's relative, right?
That's absolutely right. All right, we're going to shift gears. We'll bring in Big Z. Big's time next. We'll talk to him about where the Bears are at, what they have to play for. Does the Saints game matter last night? Had the Saints lost, would the Bears be more inclined to chase this thing because they'd have two different teams that they could catch? Or is it really just an idea that if you can catch somebody, you can do it? And Joe, you know, let's be honest about it. You know, you can't have achievement at this point. You can't stop because there's more ahead of you.
That's why you really want to see how they respond after two big games.
Yep.
Under the lights. You're tested against the Rams, and then the division's on the line. You clinch the division. Now what team shows up? The last two on the road.
Red Bigs. Bigs time.
Bigs.
With Mully and Hall. Bigs time.
The Bigs Report.
With Brad Bigs.
Bigs time.
Bigs.
His name is Brad Bigs.
Brad Bigs talks football with you.
Mully and Hall, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Gordon Whitmire kind enough to sit in this morning. And it is time to bring in our guy, Brad Bigs. He is the football man from the Chicago Tribune, a longtime contributor to the station, and certainly a dear and valued friend. Big Z, how are you? What's
morning,
going on?
Morning, boys. What's going on?
You tell us. You went back and you did your usual review of everything. What jumps out at you? How do you look at the Bears at this point?
Well, I think the thing that when you rewatch the game, the really the one thing that stood out is the consistent pressure they were able to generate on Aaron Rodgers without blitzing. And when I say blitzing, I mean sending more than four pass rushers. They did that on only three occasions. They had some zone pressures that were particularly effective, and you know they should have been with the Packers having to replace the right side of their offensive line, the way the Bears are built up front. Anytime a team's missing 40% of its starting offensive line, the Bears ought to really dominate throughout. They did that. Mitch Trubisky looked just as efficient the second time around as he did the first time around, and they played well on special teams. So it was a good victory for them to close out that home schedule at 7-1. I think we talked about that briefly yesterday. That's the best they've been at Soldier Field in 13 years. You got to go back to 2005 the last time the record was that good at home.
And the best they've been against Rodgers in a number of years too, especially
at
home.
Yeah, I mean that was the second best performance they've had against Rodgers when you're just looking at his stats, you know, his passer rating, things like that.
And he may be done, Brad. I mean, I was reading in the papers in Milwaukee that they got to shut him down. He is injured, and of course their season's over, so what would the point be of playing him?
Right.
Now he wants to play, but I wouldn't be surprised. You know, we talked about the Bears hurting him in the first game and the knee affected him all year. I think they've finished his season again.
Well, I think it's a knee. There might be a groin issue there as well. And he talked about it a little bit last Wednesday when I was up in Green Bay and didn't really want to get into all the medical. But reading between the lines, it sounded like, you know, maybe he had just been pushing off something that needs to be done at the end of the season, potentially. And that might explain for some of the missed throws, because there were some missed throws. The kind of plays that, Aaron Rodgers hits more times than he doesn't in that game. The Bears weren't going to be perfect in their coverage, and he had some open receivers that, he just didn't get the ball to. And if you're, what if your base isn't right? It's going to make it difficult to be as accurate as you should be. And as we've seen over the years, he can be as accurate or more accurate than any other quarterback out there.
So Brad, as good as things went, all the things that went right for the Bears, and it's still a 7-point game at home with Rodgers hurt, he gets healthy next year. Are you of the mindset, part of the crowd that believes this was some sort of changing of the guard in the division, or is a start all over again next year?
Well, you've got to, for it to be a changing of the guard, they've got to continue to have success, and that's where the challenge lies, because just as the Bears went from worst to first this year, there's very likely, odds tell us, I think it's happened 15 of the last 16 seasons now, odds tell us some team's going to go from worst to first next year. So the Bears have just got to, do their thing to ensure that that doesn't happen in the NFC North, that it's in another division that a team rises up. I think, Gordon, when you look at the two rosters side by side right now, the Bears have got more foundational pieces. They've got more young building blocks that you like going forward. Now, if you were going to just be picking a quarterback for next season, I think most people would take Rodgers over Trubisky, even at 35 for Aaron Rodgers. He gets whatever it is fixed, and he ought to be pretty dynamite next year. But you start looking at all the other positions, and the Packers probably don't win a whole lot of them. I think Davante Adams is the best receiver between the two teams. But the Bears have got more depth at that position right now. Certainly the Bears are healthier at that position. So, yeah, I think the Bears, might have a better roster moving toward next season. You got to go out and you got to prove it on the field. And they've got to continue to have success against Green Bay, because that's been, so fleeting for them.
The Pro Bowl will be announced tonight, I believe. How many Bears are we anticipating on it? And will there be a snub? And we're going to talk to Akeem Hicks in about an hour or so.
Well, I'd be a little surprised if Akeem Hicks was snubbed. If he doesn't make the Pro Bowl, that's a mighty big omission. That's a big snub right there. Defensively, the Bears should have a good handful of players in the mix here. I think defensively you're looking at four at least, right?
Khalil Mack, Fuller, Eddie Jackson,
and
Akeem.
Yeah.
And you could make room for Trevathan if you wanted to.
Yeah, absolutely. I wouldn't rule someone like him out. The issue that he'll have, and we used to see it in the past with Lance Briggs, guys, is that the linebackers that don't pile up sack statistics tend to not do as well in the selection process. And that's not just the fan voting. That's, all the way around. They just have trouble getting recognition. So he'd be going up against that trend, that Briggs finally broke through, but it took a while, and you wondered, well, why isn't Lance Briggs getting more love here? And he didn't have a ton of sack statistics. Then I think Tariq Cohen is clearly the most dangerous punt returner in the league right now, not just the NFC, the league. And so he should be very deserving, I would imagine. And then on offense, you know, could an offensive lineman get in? That's possible. You know, they've going into last week, I think they were fifth in the NFL in points scored. What you see is the teams that are winning, the teams with really good records, tend to place a bunch of players on the Pro Bowl rosters. So that's why it usually the snubs come from teams that have sub-500 records.
We talked this morning about what offensive weapon you would like to see, who you would like to see more of, and you know, I was saying that Allen Robinson seems like a guy that can make big plays. I think the question was designed to talk about Jordan Howard, but then Dustin said, where's Anthony Miller gone? Why isn't there more Anthony Miller? And, of course, a texter said, where's Kevin White? But at any rate, what's going on with Anthony Miller? Is he hitting a rookie wall? Is he not being featured as much as he once was?
I don't think it's that, because you're still seeing him out there. They're using a ton of personnel with three wide receivers, so you're seeing Miller on the field. I mean, maybe a little less three wide with Shaheen back in the mix. They have been running him and Trey Burton out there at the same time, but I think it's just kind of the way things have sort of fallen for him. But given that he really hasn't been involved here recently, it wouldn't be surprising to me if maybe Matt Nagy put something in the game plan to ensure that maybe he gets a shot to make a play early in the next game. Just keep him involved. And I think they've done a pretty good job of that this year, just getting all the different parts action. You know, you see only a couple games where they've had guys with over 100 receiving yards, but they're spreading it around. And when you've got, you know, four guys with three catches apiece or something like that, it makes it it can be challenging for the defense to hone in on a guy. If I was going to pick one guy, though, I would agree with you that it's Allen Robinson. I think he can do more than he has done. He's a difficult guy to cover. It would be interesting to go back and count up the number of offensive pass interference penalties that Allen Robinson has drawn this season to go along with the production he's had in terms of catching passes.
Brad, the Bears are downplaying the severity of these injuries to Jackson and Lynch. Are we going to see them make even cameo appearances here in the last two weeks? And should we? I mean, is there anything to be gained from it, even if it's just getting back on the field for a series or a quarter or a half?
Well, I don't think they'll be out there unless they're really ready to go. You're not going to roll them out there in week 17 against the Vikings if they're not good to go. The Jackson thing, I don't think that's going to turn out to be quite as bad as it potentially looked, you know, when he just kind of crumbles untouched to the turf. And Lynch, I'm not sure about, but they've been very fortunate in terms of health this season. And if they can have both those guys back for the postseason, I think that's a win. They've got a little bit of depth there. Deion Bush has certainly started before for them at safety. And they went through a spell earlier this season with Lynch out when he had a concussion. So they've got some guys they can roll through there. And really, you know, Lynch is the third guy at that position anyway. And Leonard Floyd played a really good game, and I probably should have mentioned that earlier. Yeah. He was pretty strong, maybe the best that we've seen him in a full game basis, not just with, you know, a flash play here or there. And so, you know, he's a guy that's capable of logging a high percentage of snaps. Obviously, Khalil Mack is as well. So when you miss a guy like Lynch, one of the first things you can do if you want is just bump up the play time a little bit for those other two guys, and so you're not seeing a whole lot of Isaiah Irving as the third man in. We'll have to see how the game in San Francisco sort of unfolds against the 49ers, because the Bears are going to be playing to win. They, you know, they've still got a shot here at a first-round bye, and as long as that's in play, they're going to go out there and put everything, put their best forward.
This segment with Brad Biggs brought to you by Webb Chevy. Searching for a great deal on Chevys in Chicago? Visit Webb Chevy in Plainfield or Oak Lawn. And Biggsy, we will let you go just on the way out. We discussed this morning, and we're always looking for this. I don't know why, but was there a breakthrough type thing for Mitchell Trubisky? You know, he had played pretty poorly against the Rams and then came back and played significantly better. And he talked about the idea that that he found some rhythm and that he had been too anxious in the first game. And then in this game, he felt he got into rhythm and felt more comfortable. Can you duplicate that in the playoffs, the kind of performance he had against Green Bay? And if you can, how does anyone beat him? I mean, it would seem like they'd be an awful tough out.
Well, I think, you know, maybe he had his emotions a little better in check after, you know, again, after having missed those two games. Can you replicate that in the playoffs? I think he could do that at home. Yeah. Yeah, for his first playoff game, and they'll be at home, and that'll be a big help. Can he do that on the road? We'd need to find that out. Maybe it depends on where they have to go on the road and how that game starts, but that would be the challenge, because I think a lot of guys will tell you that how the preseason is certainly vastly different from the regular season. The playoff games are even a little bit different from the regular season games. So, you know, it's still a learning process for him, but if he can continue to play like he did against Green Bay, they're going to be a tough out in the playoffs. So he takes care of the football and moves the chains, makes some plays with his legs when they're there to be made, and not just, you know, tucking it and running it, but scrambling out and then making a completion like that nice sideline pass he had to Adam Shaheen. That's what makes him difficult to defend.
All right. Biggsy joined us on the Aurelio's Pizza Hotline. It's the sauce. And Brad, we'll let you go. Kyle Long, any update at all? We got about 10 seconds.
Well, if we don't see him practicing out there tomorrow, guys, I'm going to question how soon he could potentially return. We'll certainly learn more tomorrow.
And does he need to get a practice or a game before he plays in the playoffs? You would think.
Well, he'd have to practice. I mean, you figure a lineman needs to practice 2 weeks, right?
Right. But I'm just saying, when they get the bye, could that be? Forget it. All right, buddy. Thank you.
Have a great day, guys.
That's our guy, Biggsy. Another reason to get that bye. Another reason to get more time to bring back Eddie Jackson, Aaron Lynch, and, of course, Kyle Long as well. Back to your calls, 312-644-6767. It's Mully and Haw, and Gordon is joining us today on The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.